Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, it's a Thursday. Live in Los Angeles, chilly Los Angeles, it's the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1 1 hour from now. My favorite 10 minutes of the week, Greg Cosell, NFL Meat Sandwich. Look at our beautiful set. Joy Taylor joining me today. This is a magnificent job by our staff to create our holiday set. Is it not beautiful?
It's gorgeous. They always do a great job decorating our set. We've got us in the holiday spirit. Big night. Heat got a big win. Another big NBA game tonight.
Yeah, Giannis and the Lakers, talk about that in a couple of minutes. The lead story today is Odell Beckham. Been a lot of rumors from a lot of people, I believe. When Jay Glazer said last year, the Giants are going to trade Odell Beckham, and the Giants said, no, we're not going to do it, and the Giants traded Odell Beckham. And there's guys like Jay Glazer again saying multiple people are saying that OBJ, you know, they want out of Cleveland. He's not happy. Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham yesterday is like, no, I love it here. And it was actually a great sign of maturity by OBJ. Not that he really loves Cleveland, but that he had the wherewithal to say this.
I've been talking to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers and the Toronto Argonauts, a couple Canadian League teams that I'm also, trying to get traded to. So it's been, it's been great conversations. It's just, it's done. It's old. I'm not going anywhere. I'll be here. We're going to figure this thing out. It's just too special to leave.
Okay, that's bull. It's not special. It's awful. Here's this funny story about Odell Beckham Jr. Odell Beckham Jr. was never a problem at LSU. And he was never a problem his first year in New York. But the minute the Giants had chaos, Coughlin left, Ben McAdoo came in, he did not deal well with chaos. He's one of those people. I'm the same way. I don't like chaos. I like habits. So he goes to Cleveland, and what is it this year? It's chaos. He's not happy. Well, I bought a home in Cleveland. You make $15 million a year. You got to buy real estate somewhere, and that's where he's going to live, right? 3 or 4 years. What, he's going to rent an apartment? You know, be part of a duplex downtown? Homes are cheap in Cleveland. He bought one. He'll run it out to stars that play in Cleveland for the next 25 years if he can't sell it. LeBron still has a place in Cleveland. Okay? When you play in a city and you're a pro athlete, you buy houses, you buy real estate, and you can figure you're going to be there for 4 or 5, 6 years. Family comes over, kids, whatevs. Here's the reality is, though, this was a very smart thing for Odell Beckham to say. It's becoming more of a wide receiver league, not to say that pounding the rock doesn't matter. Baltimore, San Francisco, New England, these are running teams. They're very good, Saints too. But perimeter players matter more than ever. And coming into Cleveland, Odell Beckham's reputation was he's a little bit of a distraction and he's hurt a lot. What are the two things Odell Beckham has done this year? They're very smart. He's played through injuries. He's hurt. He's not going to show you he's hurt. So he wants to switch that reputation. I'm not hurt. I'm fine. A little nagging injury, no big deal. He's trying to change that narrative that I don't miss games. The second thing he's done, he was a little bit of the distraction in New York. Yet this year, as the house is on fire in Cleveland, in the last 6-8 weeks, he's been the stable guy. The helmet situation, the T-shirt with the coach, Baker calls out the medical staff. You know what you haven't heard from? Odell Beckham. He's been the voice of reason. It's too special here. This is a very smart move by Odell Beckham. There are several teams in the NFL that would love to have him. Russell Wilson in Seattle, New England and Tom Brady. I think even New Orleans would peek at him if he wasn't as expensive as he is. But in a increasingly vertical league where special players separate, better athletes, Lamar and Mahomes and Tyreek Hill, Michael Thomas are separating, he's got huge value, and he has smartly, over the last 2 to 3 months, changed the narrative. He doesn't get hurt as much, and he's actually in dysfunctional Cleveland, very stable. By the way, the blame pie in Cleveland, I have never put Odell Beckham in it. I've said before, 75% of the issues here are front office driven. Then I think it's fair to say Baker and Freddie account for 25%, 12.5 each. But I thought once again yesterday, Odell Beckham, very smart, very mindful, very aware of his negative brands, hurt and a distraction, went the opposite way to shift it. He can tell me he loves Cleveland and it's special, but he's told me personally he hates chaos, and Cleveland right now leads the NFL in chaos. I still believe he wants out. I was told he was going to stay in New York. I didn't believe that. I believe the reports, and I believe the reports now. He's not long for Cleveland. All right, tonight is quite possibly a preview of the NBA Finals. Milwaukee is the best team in the East. There are several teams in the East that are interesting. Miami's playing very well, and Boston, I watched them last night a little bit against Dallas. But I don't think Miami, Philadelphia, or Boston can beat Giannis and that coaching staff and the depth of Milwaukee four times in 2 weeks. And the Lakers are the hottest team in the NBA, and I think Utah's very interesting. I like watching them play in Denver and Houston. Dallas is now a very, very fun watch when Luka gets healthy. But I don't think anybody can beat the Lakers four times in 2 weeks except the Clippers. So here we are once again. I was told all offseason, this is the year of parity, and we've got three teams that are clearly better than all the other teams. And I would say the four best players in the league play on those three teams, LeBron, Giannis, AD, and Kawhi. And we have no parity. And that's okay. Because nothing is phonier than people who just don't like the NBA using it as a jumping off point when there's games like tonight and when you have dominant performances saying, I don't, this is why I can't watch the NBA, it lacks parity. But do you like tennis? Because Serena's dominated one side of it and Federer, Nadal, and Djokovic have dominated the guy's side. Do you like college football? Because Clemson, Ohio State, and Oklahoma are once again great. How about FCS football, where North Dakota State will win its seventh national championship in 8 years? Or in baseball, where the Yankees basically guaranteed an American League Championship Series spot by signing Gerrit Cole this week to a contract of $324 million. College basketball will be dominated by seven teams this year. Gonzaga, Duke, Carolina, Kansas, just to name a few. If you don't like the NBA, that's fine, but don't use the parody argument. You know what I've never seen in my entire career since they invented the iPhone? I've never seen anybody go up and ask for a selfie with parody. Not one time. Hey, parody, can I get a selfie? You ask stars to get a selfie. You ask celebrities to get a selfie. You ask famous people to get selfies. And tonight, Giannis, LeBron, and AD are celebrities and stars and famous people, and they'll get a nice rating tonight. And so will Ohio State and Clemson. That'll get a massive rating because it's full of stars and great quarterbacks and traditional powers. If I have to hear again how you want parody, I'm going to vomit. Nobody watches parody. Hockey has it, and it's crickets. They had to play games in blizzards to get people to watch. That's hockey, and they've got nothing but parody. Tennis doesn't have it. Women's sports, women's basketball doesn't have it. Golf has it, and y'all complained you missed Tiger. Then he won the Masters and the President's Cup, and y'all went crazy over the course of the weekend. Oh, my God, Tiger's back. He was dominant. He was the end of parody. And we all cry and go nuts. I watched Twitter this weekend. Everybody was talking golf. Talking about that guy. They were talking about Tiger. And there was no parody with Tiger. So tonight it's LeBron and it's Giannis and it's the Bucks and the Lakers. And only the Clippers are good enough to potentially beat the Lakers or Giannis and the Bucks four times in 2 weeks. And I'm completely okay with it. Just admit it. You may not like the NBA. But don't use it as a jumping off point ripping parody. College football doesn't have it. FCS football doesn't have it. Women's basketball doesn't have it. Men's and women's tennis doesn't have it. International soccer doesn't have it. Guess who's good in soccer internationally again? Let's go with Brazil, Argentina, Chile, Germany, Spain. Come on, give me a break. LeBron's going to end up either in the Western Conference Finals or the Finals, and he's going to beat Giannis. And you're going to ask for a selfie if either of those two guys, LeBron or Giannis, walk by in a hotel lobby. You wouldn't ask for a selfie from parody. And I'll be watching tonight.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
You know, I've said this before, and I don't say it to be glib. I think 30% or more of being an NFL quarterback is really resilience mentally. You have to have some physical gifts. Nobody doubts that. The all-time great guys have a certain arm, size, speed, whatevs. Lamar, you can see it. Mahomes, you can see it. Aaron Rodgers, you can see it. But I would say Tom Brady and Drew Brees' greatest strength is their resilience, is their mental toughness. And this is why I love Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott's hurt. He can't even throw till Saturday. Can't throw till Saturday. He's a quarterback. The throwing thing's important. He can't throw all week at practice. That's how much pain he's in. His teammates will talk about it. Troy Aikman talked about it. Reporters are talking about it. He pretty much doesn't want to talk about it. This is the thing I love about Dak. So Dak Prescott is the most criticized player in the NFL the last 3 years. It's not close. Now, first of all, Tony Romo was also the most criticized player in the NFL before him. So part of it is the position quarterback for the Cowboys. Romo got crushed. But what made Romo really good and why I loved him and why Romo's a great broadcaster, because his instincts are good. Great broadcasters like Romo, their instincts are good. They kind of know what to say. If you sit in a booth and every 8 seconds you have to say something smart like Troy Aikman or Tony Romo, you got to have good instincts. Otherwise, bad instinct guy says something stupid and gets fired and he's gone. Romo always had good instincts. He had good instincts at a microphone. He has great instincts on television. So did Troy Aikman. But so does Dak. Romo didn't have the biggest arm. Aikman didn't run around much. And Dak, arm, mobility, a lot of meh. But this is where it's great. Biggest game this year for Dak. He comes in hurt. He can't throw till Saturday. Not a peep, no excuses, doesn't respond to anybody. I tell young broadcasters this all the time. When you go to Twitter and fire back at your critics, that's not strength, it's weakness. You got to be able to handle it. Aaron Rodgers has talent, but too often gets snippy and defensive and has rabbit ears. Baker Mayfield responds to everything, and I think Baker thinks it's a strength. It's a weakness. Here's Dak, biggest game, hurt, won't talk about it. His teammates are all like he'd have to be dead to not play. He's the toughest guy I've ever seen. But his mental toughness, 3 years the most ripped, scrutinized, mocked, questioned player, biggest game, dude is hurt. Not a peep. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, Baker Mayfield responds to everything. I know you think I hate the kid, but I defended him yesterday. But remember this from Baker Mayfield. Can you imagine Dak melting down, forget a game or a fourth down, over a question at a press conference?
I'm going to stop saying but. I just told you the clock was running and we had a penalty. You want to give them the ball back? No. You don't play. You don't know it. That's just plain and simple.
Were you happy with their drive?
Was I happy with the drive? No, we didn't score points. It's the dumbest question you could ask.
What?
He melts down over a question from an Ohio reporter. Here's Dak in the center of the football world, the biggest game of the weekend. Not a peep, won't talk about it, doesn't respond. Teammates say he's tough. You've never seen a guy like him. Unwavering. Anthem controversy, not a problem. Big loss all season long. Dallas lost to this team and that team and this team, and the ratings were huge, and everybody talked about it. Never, never responded to any of it harshly. That's why I like Dak. And I think there's about 7 to 8. I got to say this. If you look around at the NFL right now, we are very lucky. Overwhelmingly, not only do we have all these gifted young quarterbacks, they have great quarterback DNA. Darnold doesn't respond to anything. Deshaun doesn't respond to anything. Lamar doesn't respond to anything. Breeze, Brady. I mean, you go down the line, Baker's the exception. It is not just about your arm. It's how do you handle crisis? Because in the NFL, quarterback, even Mahomes had a crisis this year and handled it like a pro.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
And with that, we go to one of my favorite guys, 40 years at NFL Films, Greg Cosell is joining us. Greg, how are you? We're moving into the holiday season. Football matters more now. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Colin. How are you?
I am fantastic. So you watch the Cowboys against the Rams, and you're like, good God, what just happened? Was that Dallas? Was that the Rams? What did you make of the film?
Well, I think Dallas, in a sense, went back to the drawing board. Let's look at their plays through the first three quarters, when you could argue that was the competitive phase of the game. They ran 56 plays through three quarters. 22 of those were Ezekiel Elliott carries. That's 40% of their offensive plays through three quarters were handoffs to Elliott. I think they made a clear decision that this offense runs through Elliott. All year I felt, Colin, that they've sort of been trying to figure out how all this works, because they have a new coordinator in Kellen Moore who wants to do some cool stuff, and they've got three very good receivers, and they have Prescott, who's in his fourth year, theoretically, you know, advancing each year. And they became, I think, a passing team in many ways, and I think they went back to the drawing board.
Okay.
And I think they put up big numbers throwing the ball, but I think there was an inconsistency. See, you have to remember one thing, too. The running game helps your defense, because it shortens games, and your defense plays fewer plays. And that has been a big part of what they've been over the last number of years. And we'll see if they continue to do that against Philadelphia.
So maybe it's my imagination, but for the last several years, I think Brady's gotten a little tired in December, and I thought Drew Brees was tired last year in December. That five games off, this is as good as Drew. I mean, he looks his feet. I think the time off helped. What's the film say?
Well, it's funny you say that, because I thought he moved very well this week.
Yes.
You know, I thought that his and again, the movement with him is not running out of the pocket. It's just the movement within the pocket. He's always, in the prime of his career, he's had a powerful lower body, and he's moved extremely well within the pocket. But this is really a fun offense to watch. And I think they're very difficult to defend. Think of it this way. You're trying to gain as much of an advantage as possible before the ball is snapped as an offense. So how do you do that? You do it with your use of personnel. You do it with formations. You do it with snap counts and cadence. You do it with motions and shifts. The Saints are really, really good at all those things. And therefore, the defense at times just has to settle in and standardize. And then Brees is an absolute maestro when it comes to what's eliminating what's not there and isolating what is there before the ball is snapped. So he plays incredibly decisively.
Yeah. So a team that we love for most of the year has now shown a couple times against Arizona, against Atlanta this week, against Seattle. There are little signs of inefficiency with the San Francisco 49ers. But
yes.
Could I argue, it's been 2-3 weeks ago, offensive injuries, and now it's defensive injuries. They did play Baltimore very tough. They beat New Orleans. Could this just be nothing more than they don't have some of their best guys?
Could be. You know, one thing that, and again, these are statistics, but statistics do mean something. In their first 8 or 9 games of the season, they ran the ball over 30 times in each of those games. In the last 6, they've run the ball less than 30 times in each of those games, and they're 3-3. Again, it's a number, but I think ultimately this offense does start with the run game. Their offensive line was handled by Atlanta, by the way.
Yes.
It was a really difficult day for their offensive line, pretty much across the board. Garoppolo never found his rhythm, and he's as pure a rhythm thrower as there is. You know, he's one of those guys that drops back, and he needs to get rid of the football.
Yeah.
He rarely looked comfortable. He played a little fast. You know, he did not have one of his better games. And therefore, their pass game really was not a factor in the game. Their two longest pass plays came on plays in which the receiver ran behind the line of scrimmage and just caught the ball in the flat and then ran for some yards.
Yeah. Speaking of San Francisco, that division has come down to the Niners and the Seahawks. And Seattle, listen, Russell's been spectacular. We know Pete can coach. Russell is often seen as their identity, and I love him as a player. But that running game, when Penny and Carson are healthy, it's a pretty stout running game. Does the film say that?
Oh, the offense starts with the run game. Keep in mind that they play six offensive linemen, I think more than any team in the league, almost 25% of their snaps, and there's a reason for that. One reason is the run game, which makes obvious sense. Another offensive lineman's a better blocker than a tight end, but they also use it in the pass game. And you know why they use it in the pass game? They often line up with six offensive linemen and three wide receivers. They use it in the pass game because Wilson is both a distributor and a playmaker. So he becomes, in a sense, the fifth weapon. They don't necessarily need a fifth true receiver because of Wilson's improvisational ability becomes a weapon. So therefore, they can really shore up their blocking, both in the run game and the pass game, with a sixth offensive lineman, still knowing that the Wilson factor can add to their pass game.
Is that a hard matchup, do you think, for NFL defenses if they're doing something nobody else is?
It's a hard matchup because defenses have to decide how they want to match up from a personnel standpoint. It's the same issue you face when you play Lamar Jackson. When they go big people, two and three tight ends, and you put big people on the field, you don't have enough speed. And so it's this, you get a little bit of that issue. Defenses against Seattle have to decide how to match up.
So, you know, I've said something all year, and it's easy for me to say it, but you can break it down. When I watch Buffalo, I think that team is well coached. And here's how I say it. When my eyes see consistency, don't give up cheap plays, rarely a blown coverage.
Yep.
I like Buffalo's personnel. I think they're really interesting in the secondary safeties, and they have an elite corner. But I watch Buffalo, and I see coaching. I don't see – I mean, they do have an elite corner and a safety I like. But when you look at the Buffalo story, is it personnel or coaching?
I think it's both, because I think that they're a team that rarely makes mistakes on the defensive side of the ball, and I think they have better players than people think. See, Buffalo is Buffalo, so people just dismiss them, as you know. But I think that their two linebackers in their nickel, and they're a predominant nickel team. They don't really play dime. They play with five defensive backs, but Edmonds and Milano are really good nickel linebackers. Milano is never talked about. You know, Milano in college, because he had the same coach, played the same position at Boston College that Jabril Peppers played in Michigan. And Milano's a really, really good player. And Edmonds, as we know about him. And you mentioned the safeties. I think both Poyer and Hyde, in the context of that defense, are really good. They're interchangeable players.
Yes.
You know, one is not free and one is not strong. They both play on the back end, and they can both play in the box. They both can cover tight ends man-to-man. I think they're really good players. I guarantee they're not overlooked by the teams that are preparing to play them. They might be overlooked nationally by the media, but that's irrelevant.
Yeah, no, I when I watch Buffalo play, I just see, I mean, first of all, they're really physical. They're never in the wrong space. They've got playmakers on defense. I mean, I think the Buffalo story to me, and I've watched them play Brady this year. I've watched them play good quarterbacks. Their offense still has limitations. I watch that defense, and I'm like, they don't give you an inch for free.
No,
nothing.
Brady was 18 for 39 for 150 yards in that week four matchup.
So, okay, I got two quarterbacks I want to talk about. Deshaun Watson. The Texans are infuriating. I've said this before. They're absurdly inconsistent, but they're not bad. There's a difference. I think they feel sometimes to me they're too Deshaun Watson go make a play dependent. Do you buy this team as the weather gets cold, the coaching gets better in December and January, potentially in the playoffs?
Well, I think Watson is inconsistent. I actually think they have a pretty consistent run game. Hyde had 26 carries this week. He's been a pretty good back for them, and their run game has been pretty solid all year. I think that Watson has inconsistent tendencies in his play. You know, he's another example of someone who is talked about as if he's on Mount Rushmore, and I like Deshaun Watson, and I think he, as he continues to improve, ideally that he can become really I don't want to say special, but more consistent. He can make special plays at any time, and he does that. And then we talk about him in that way. But I think he needs to become more consistent making the routine plays. Like, I was really pleased this week when he hit the two touchdowns to Stills. He got man coverage. He knew where to go with the ball, and he made two very, very good throws.
Yeah, here's one of them right there,
He also made some really good throws in the fourth quarter to Hopkins. Now, he does have that movement ability, and that's where he's special. One of the throws to Hopkins in the fourth quarter, he moved, and Hopkins did an unbelievable job of recognizing it as well. But when he throws from the pocket, because he's a good thrower, you know, he needs to be more consistent in that area.
Yeah, no, he can be spectacular, but sometimes inconsistent. I think that's a – and by the way, I think, Greg, that was the complaint out of college, is that he wasn't a natural thrower or a consistent thrower. I think the spectacular is not an issue for him, but I think he's become what a lot of the scouting reports said, is that there were some questions, and even today there are still some questions as a natural thrower in the pocket.
Yeah, and I think that's fair, and he's a bouncer. You see it when you watch you can see it on TV. He never really plants his back foot and throws with a firm base. He's a little bit of a bouncer.
Yeah. No, I mean, we're watching that as you talk about it.
Yeah.
Greg Cosell. Okay, this has been a very good last couple of weeks for me, because for a couple years, I had to hear that Nick Foles was better than Wentz, and I was just over it.
Well, that's pointless.
It's completely pointless.
Yeah.
I almost punched a multitude of people right in the forehead. I was over it. Now Carson Wentz working with a beyond skeleton crew. It's tight ends.
He's working with me and you.
I mean, he's got nothing. And he's coming from behind to win these games. And I just want to talk about Wentz because, listen, sometimes there's excuses. And other times there's reasons. He's got nobody to throw to.
No. Now, I think he still misses a few that he has to make, by the way. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you that he's playing pristine. He misses a few that he has to make. But overall, he's playing with – they have arguably the worst receiving core in the National Football League, and with no speed whatsoever. You know, it's funny, they're playing a Dallas team this week that probably has the second or third best receiving core in the entire league. And here's Philly coming in with really no weapons whatsoever on the perimeter. And that's what Wentz is dealing with every week. And their offense is sort of geared to the fact that they don't have any playmakers.
So the play of the week this week is Carson Wentz.
Yeah, I decided to show the game-winning touchdown just because I think it's a simple but cool play. So let's start it just so people see it. And they came up to the line of scrimmage incredibly quickly here, and they had to snap the ball. They obviously needed to do that. So Wentz drops back, and he lofts one, and he hits Ward for a touchdown. But there's a cool little element to this play. And as the Eagles were in what we call a tight bunch, and here they were in a tight bunch to the wide side of the field.
Yep.
And what they did is they had Greg Ward. He was the outside receiver in the bunch, or number one. The point man in the bunch was J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. And you can see, he's on the line of scrimmage. Now, the Redskins played man-to-man. Johnson was matched on Arcega-Whiteside, and Josh Norman was matched on Ward. Now, they do a really nice job here. Arcega-Whiteside, as he releases, what he's basically going to do is set a pick. He's going to force Norman to have to go behind him. So right now, Norman's in a trailing position on Ward's crossing route. Norman is beat right now. So all Ward has to do is run across the field. Okay, that's the easy part. And you can see that clearly. Norman is in a trail position. He's a yard or two behind. Ward's going to beat him across the field. This throw now becomes what we call a spot throw. What Wentz is going to do is he's going to loft it to a spot. He's not really looking at the receiver. He's lofting it to a spot based on the concept of the play. And that's why he was able to throw it with precision ball placement, because he's throwing it to a spot. And you see that clearly.
Yeah, look at that. It's amazing how often in this game it's the pick, it's the little stuff, it's the details. We blame the quarterback if that play doesn't go right, but if the pick's not set, there's nobody open.
That's correct.
It was clearly designed from the first moment of that play. That was the receiver that was supposed to get the ball.
No, that was the play design. And down there, you don't have a lot of time. You're not going through, you know, progressions there. That was the play design.
Yep. And it worked. Greg Cosell, 40 years NFL Films. Have a great holiday season, Greg.
Thanks, Colin. You too. I appreciate that.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
So John Gruden, there's a story by Mike Lombardi, former NFL exec, well-connected dude. And he's like, listen, Derek Carr and John Gruden, it's like that impending divorce. It's when a better opportunity presents itself, John Gruden's going to move on. I would say be very careful, John. Patrick Mahomes is going to drive you crazy, but Derek Carr's a franchise quarterback, and depending on the Sunday, he's maybe 11th, 12th best in this league. It is remarkable how few teams are truly happy with their quarterback. And I'll give you an example. This morning, I was going to use emojis, and I thought, let's take all 32 teams and the five categories of happiness. So here are teams that are truly happy with their quarterback. Wouldn't trade them for the world. Chiefs, Eagles, Ravens, Packers, Saints, Seahawks, Titans. They are all in. And Philadelphia, Texans, by the way. What did I say? Texans, Seahawks, Saints. So basically, Mahomes, Wentz, Lamar, Rodgers, Breeze, Russell, Deshaun, that's their guy. They're financially vested. They're emotionally vested. And they really like him as dudes. All right, that's the next level. They're truly happy. The next level is they're happy for now. Jimmy G's good, but what if he stinks against Seattle next weekend and gets whacked in the first round of the playoffs and throws three picks? The Cowboys, Falcons like Matt Ryan. The game is changing. He's not a great athlete. Brady, they like, but he's 42 and there are signs of age. Rams, Steelers, Vikings. Again, they like Big Ben, but he's getting old and Mason Rudolph's not the guy to replace him. They're happy for now, but there are people in the room going, we got to draft one. Ooh, the world's changing. There's things they can't do. Then there's the third category of quarterback. They're happy so far. Josh Allen, Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, Daniel Jones, Sam Darnold. The teams are like, listen, they're our guys. We're not paying them anything. So we're getting a huge discount at the most important position. And they've showed us something. Even Baker. They've showed us something. They can win games. They got talent. Happy so far. And then the next two categories are the ones to really glom onto. The next one is pretending to be happy. Saying all the right things. Bears, Bucks, Colts, Lions, Raiders, Titans. Deep down, you've seen a lot of Tannehill and Stafford can't win enough big games. And Jacoby Brissett's a good kid, but he's no Andrew Luck. And Jameis has really good Sundays and really bad ones. And you're not sure what you're going to get. And the Bears with Trubisky have to sell it to the public. They're pretending to be happy, but they're not really happy. Then there are the other ones, just not happy at all, and they're not going to BS about it. Bengals, Broncos, Chargers, Dolphins, Jags, Panthers, Redskins. Chargers won't come out and say it, but everybody in the world knows. Phillip's old, unathletic, and makes dumb plays. Those teams are not happy at all. But here's the key to that, and I've been watching the NFL for over 40 years. In the last two categories, you've got 13 teams pretending to be happy or just unhappy. That is over a third of the league. So when Gruden says he's unhappy with Derek Carr, and that story comes out, he's just pretending to be happy. That's my entire life been the league. Over a third of the league is looking for somebody else. And there's always about two to three quarterbacks in the next draft that will satiate or assist or elevate a couple of teams. But be very, very careful, John Gruden. Outside of Rich Gannon for about an hour and a half, you haven't liked any of your quarterbacks long term. It's hard to find them. It's hard to develop them. It's hard to get them the right offensive line to protect them. It's expensive to get the weapons, increasingly expensive to get the weapons to elevate them. Be very careful on Derek Carr. Okay, because over a third of the league's never happy with their quarterback, and a lot of poor decisions or rushed judgment is made.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app. Ready to make some sweet cash? Colin's going to give you his three sure bets for the college football weekend. It's time for Colin's Marquee Three. Clemson versus Ohio State.
Clemson -2. I like Clemson to win by a touchdown. I thought the number was low. I think we're undervaluing Clemson. I think we look at their conference and say they didn't play anybody, and that is a huge benefit. They are healthy. They've got a ton of depth. And I believe when you don't know who's going to win, you go with a coaching staff in college. And I think Clemson has the best coaching staff by a wide margin. They have three current head coaches, capable guys that could run programs. Dabo is just the number one guy. I'm going to take Clemson here. First of all, Trevor Lawrence since week 9, good luck. Ohio State's defense gets the credit. I could argue Clemson's is actually better. First in the country in multiple categories. Trevor Lawrence since week 9 has been unstoppable. I don't think the ACC is great. But who in the Big Ten is amazing outside of Ohio State? Michigan? Lost all the good teams they played. Wisconsin? Well coached, certainly. Not a ton of great NFL players. Who else you selling me in that conference? Iowa? Okay, not special. Listen, right now Ohio State's defense is good, but in the last 4 games, they're allowing 21 a game. That's against Big Ten defenses. Clemson, NFL back, NFL quarterback, NFL offensive line, NFL tight end, NFL receivers. I think Clemson is going to win 36-30. I'm not sure it will feel that close, but I think this is the kind of speed that Ohio State has not seen anything close to, and Clemson has. They're 5-0 in the last 2 years against SEC speed, and they've blown most of those SEC teams like Alabama out.
Oklahoma versus LSU.
I'm going to take Oklahoma to cover here. Again, Oklahoma's going to hear for 5 weeks, you're going to get crushed. Do you know the number one seed has never won the college football championship? So LSU's winning the Heisman, Ed Orgeron the best coach in the world, and Oklahoma's hearing how irrelevant they are. Well, Jalen Hurts is the only quarterback with 30 passing touchdowns and 15 rushing touchdowns. They're going to move the ball on LSU. LSU's defense is good, but was gashed by lesser offenses. Oklahoma's defense was pathetic last year. It was first in the Big 12 this year. It's a much better defense. Also, Oklahoma, 3-0. We have seen Oklahoma in these big games against SEC teams. They gave Georgia trouble. They beat Alabama years ago. Oklahoma is big boy football. I think this game's going to feel very, very close, and I do think LSU escapes. I'm going to say 41-30 Oklahoma, but it'll feel closer than that score. That's a late LSU touchdown. I think Oklahoma's going to move the ball on LSU. They're going to play with fire. The suspensions aren't going to change anything. You're going to get over 70 points in this football game. It's going to be a shootout. And Jalen Hurts is going to have a very interesting day because he can beat you with his feet or he can beat you throwing it.
USC versus Iowa.
I think this is a coaching mismatch. Otherwise, two very even teams. The Trojans have better perimeter players. Iowa's got better line play, including my favorite or second favorite defensive lineman in the country and second favorite offensive lineman in the country. I'll take Iowa minus 2. USC football, second most turnovers in the Pac-12, and lots of penalties. That has been a hallmark of Clay Helton football. A lot of penalties, lots of mistakes. This is a program right now, last 2 years, bowl record 500, out of conference about 500 against the Big Ten. It should be noted the Big Ten is 6-1 against the Pac-12 in bowl games the last 2 years. Why? Because the Big Ten is better right now than the Pac-12 is. And you'll notice it in line play. Iowa's offensive line is much better than USC's offensive line, much more powerful. And the pass rush from Iowa, I think, will be a problem for USC's freshman quarterback. Again, USC can score. They've got tremendous perimeter players. They'll beat Iowa over the top. But I think Nate Stanley, the quarterback, won't make a ton of mistakes. Iowa's defense this year has been excellent. It's always well coached. And I'm going to take Iowa, the better staff, to win 28-24 and give USC's offense a couple of cheap touchdowns over the top, but not sustaining any drives. As far as USC yesterday, and this is really hard to even say, USC in a 12-team conference finished 12th in recruiting. Now, they didn't have a lot of scholarships to give out, but if you hit 5-star players like they usually do in previous decades and years, you'd be like 2 or 3 in the conference. Listen, you could recruit deck furniture and beat Oregon State. This is a sign of the times for USC. And there's a lot of reasons that big brands like Alabama and Oklahoma and Florida State fail. We've seen this, right? We've seen Oklahoma struggle. They had the wrong coach. We saw Alabama for a decade struggle. They had the wrong coach. Florida State, Willie Taggart, not the right coach. College football is about coaching, okay? But here's the other thing that's damning. Kids grow up in America, football players, and they want to play for the local school because they want their mom and dad to see them. 25 best California high school football players, none chose USC. When you lose the local kids, you've lost the program. We can talk about the president at USC. We can talk about the athletic director at USC. We can talk about whoever you want at USC. You lost the 18-year-old at Sarah High School. You lost him. And when you lose the kids, the local kids who are willing to play 7-hour flight and drive away from home, mom and dad won't be able to see them play, only on television. Cousins can't see them. Mom and dad can't see them. And they're willing to go all the way to the south, where you fly to Atlanta, then you get on another flight, and then you drive an hour. It's a 12-hour schloid for your mom, your grandma, your dad, your uncles to come see you play, and they watched all your high school games, and you could play right down the street, and you chose Clemson. Ever tried to get to Clemson from even Los Angeles? It's good luck. Newfoundland is easier. I mean, honestly. The reality is, when you lose the local kids whose dads have been SC fans, who watch USC football for in their living room for 18 years, and that kid chooses other states, hell, other regions, you lost the program. It's not about blaming the president. It's not about blaming the athletic director. They inherited this. But when you lose the high school kid and the high school family, and dad says, you know what, son, you're probably right. Because kids want to win. They want to go play in TV. They want to be in full stadiums. They want to be developed. They want to play in the NFL. You lose them, you've lost the program.